This is Get a Real Job, the podcast devoted to people who choose risk over safe bets, who pursue their passion against all odds and are doing what they want, how they want, despite people and sometimes the voices in their own heads telling them they're nuts.
When the field that I wanted to work in didn't exist, I created it.
The only thing you have to decide is how hard do you want to work.
I really never went into the design of the restaurant of not succeeding. One way or another, I was going to succeed.
I'm your host, Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com. Thanks for listening. And now, get a real job.
Hey, everybody. This is Dan. First and foremost, I want to say thank you for listening to this and for listening to every other episode of the Get a Real Job podcast. I presume you are religiously listening to every episode, and if you're not, you're dead to me. No, that's not true. But I do appreciate anyone who has taken the time to listen to any of the episodes and anyone who has sent me any kind of feedback. Truly, truly appreciate it. So a little bit behind the curtain. So I've recorded a bunch of these in advance. I've got about 10 of them in the can is the industry speak for it. And since I recorded a lot of these, the world has completely turned upside down, as we are all painfully and sadly aware. And so I thought about these recorded episodes. Should I try to edit them to try to make them make some sense in the current situation we're all in? And then I realized there is absolutely nothing about the current situation that we're all in that makes any sense. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and release them as they were recorded. In some cases, you will hear people talking excitedly about something that's coming up for them, like an upcoming race or an expedition or a book release. And, you know, a lot of those things, sadly, have been canceled since the coronavirus pandemic has crippled our world. But I hope that listening to these interviews, one, will just be entertaining, hopefully, and also inspiring. You know, these people, you know, put their heart and soul into the thing that they love. And, you know, just listening to someone talk passionately about something that they love, I've always found, like, really inspiring and really uplifting. So hopefully it does the same for you. So I'm going to stop babbling and we'll get on to the next episode. And just once again, thanks so much for listening. Hope everyone listening is healthy and staying safe. And talk to you again soon.
Okay, well, today's guest is someone you really want to know if you need some pointers talking your way out of a speeding ticket. Racing superstar Alexander Rossi won the Indy 500 his rookie year in 2016. And I don't know if he's the kind of guy who believes in jinxes, so I'm not going to jinx anything. I'm just going to say that some racing experts believe he's going to add a whole bunch of new trophies to his collection by the end of this year's IndyCar race season. So please welcome the fast, the glorious Alexander Rossi. Alex, how are you?
Good, man. Thank you. That was elaborate. I don't know that I can help anyone with speeding tickets, though. I have a couple of my own.
That's right. So, I mean, you must get asked that like a million times, but do race car drivers, or you in particular, do you actually get a lot of speeding tickets?
There was a period of my life where I did, for sure. And then it was to the point where the next one was going to like suspend my license. So then I actually haven't gotten one in, I think, 4 years. So, you know, as you get older, you get wiser and all those sort of things. And also you buy radar detectors. So that also helps.
Well, I would also think that one or two cops maybe realize who they just pulled over, and instead of giving you a ticket, ask for your autograph. Has that ever happened?
One or two times. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We won't dwell on that, but you're a law abiding citizen. So we'll just stick with
that. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So IndyCar is kicking off, and how do you feel about going into this season? What season number is this for you?
It's number 5, which is crazy. It's gone by as quickly as it has. So, you know, IndyCar is kind of unique. It's a very long off season. Our last race was in September, and our first race is coming up. this coming weekend down in Florida. So it's been, what, 5.5 months outside of the car in IndyCar. So there's a lot of kind of built up anticipation and excitement and just kind of wanting to get the ball rolling. You know, the past 2 years we've finished second and third in the championship and have come up just short of winning the championship. And really that's our main goal.
Right.
We were lucky enough to get the 500 win out of the way early in 2016, but now we need to win a championship. So we've done a lot of work in the off season to try and improve on our weak areas and hopefully it'll be enough at the end of the year.
So what is that training like? I mean, there's obviously a lot of mental and physical rigors of, you know, driving 500 miles at insanely high speeds. Like, how does someone get prepared for that and to do it again and again and again?
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people, I think, underestimate the physical aspect of driving a race car. So, I mean, in IndyCar, you know, there's no power steering, first of all. The cornering speeds for these ski loads of 3.5 to 4 Gs, which is four times your body weight and lateral force. And then, you know, coupled with that, you have the kind of just predisposed anxiety of driving 230 miles an hour with 32 other people.
Right.
So there's a big cardio demand. There's, you know, most of the races, considering we race in summer seasons, are very hot. You can lose kind of 5 to 6 pounds in fluids during the race. So like I said, the cardio element's very important. And then the strength side of it's important as well. Cause like I said, at the beginning, there's no power steering. So, you're kind of fighting the car the whole time for 2.5 hours. And, you're dealing with tenths and hundredths of a second, right? So
yeah.
Even though you may only be starting to make small mistakes, ultimately, you know, those compound and will definitely cost you a race win and a championship.
So, you know, when you're in the middle of a race and you feel like, oh, I just made one tiny little error that, you know, is, you know, as you said, could add up if you keep doing it. How do you, or what method do you have to get yourself back in the game, not dwell on that mistake and also not repeat it?
That's a really good question. So some guys, not all, but I in particular work with a sports psychologist, kind of for the mental side of things. And you kind of keyed in already. Racing is a really big mental game. Mm-hmm. There's a physical demand, but ultimately, you know, we don't have much else to do during the week,
right,
other than kind of prepare to drive race cars. So the fitness side of it isn't that hard to attain. But when you are dealing with these very finite margin between success and crashing, being able to mentally handle, you know, making a mistake in a race and being able to recover from that is very important. So techniques that I use range from kind of pre-event visualization to some basic forms of meditation. And then really, if it's happening in the race, it's just, you know, breathing, a simple kind of breathing step mm-hmm. that I take on the next straightaway to kind of just get back into that zone, if you will, because you're driving at such a rate of speed that you don't want to be thinking about things on a conscious level.
Right.
You don't want to be thinking about every next move that you have to do because you'll end up getting behind that way.
Right, right.
You want to kind of operate on a subconscious level, and then your kind of conscious mind is thinking about the race strategy, the cars around you, the race setup, kind of things that you're going to do in the next pit stop to improve the car and stuff like that. So getting back into that zone and just letting it come naturally is a very important skill to be able to have. And honestly, at this level, most of the guys already have it.
Yeah.
We've been doing this all for probably 2 or 3 decades at least now.
Right, right, right. And I assume you never meditate while you're in the middle of a race. That would probably be a bad idea.
No, probably not great.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So you mentioned you've been doing this for a long time and you are, by most people's standards, including myself, a pretty young guy. So when actually did you get started in this?
I started in go-karts at the age of 10, which is actually pretty late. I mean, a lot of guys that I race against started when they were 5 or 6 years old in go-karts. So I started when I was 10 and I first got to a race car when I was 13, and then, you know, began kind of doing it professionally at 16. And I'm 29 now. So it's been, you know, 13 to 15 years, depending on how you look at it.
Right, right. What's the go-kart scene like? You know, I'm a parent with kids who play Little League, so I know all about like crazy baseball dads. What's like, is there a version of that in the go-kart?
It's the exact same. Honestly, okay. My dad was kind of one of them. And the reason for that is because most of these kids, like, it's their dad's tuning on a go-kart and building the go-karts, working on them during the week and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when you get to a pretty high level of karting, kind of in your last years, because there is such thing as professional go-karting, then you have tuners and mechanics and really engineers that are kind of running the program for you. And it's kind of like a mini race car operation in some sense. But when it's just, you know, your kid, it's just dad and mom, you know, wrenching on the carts. And so there's a lot of kind of effort and money that they're having to put into it. So when some other kid or some official does something that they disagree with, you know, it's kind of the same, same result.
But hopefully none of them are running out onto the track.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, really? Okay.
You'd be really surprised. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It gets wild out there.
That's amazing. I can't believe there's not more videos on the internet of that, but I'll have to look for them.
There might be, yeah.
Yeah. So do you ever take a ride in a cart just for fun now, or
I honestly hate go-karts.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I'm at the point where they're really, you know, the big ones, the fast ones, they're really violent, because, you know, they'll do 95, 100 miles an hour. I mean, they're 48 horsepower, 6 feet, out of 125 motorcycle engines that are strapped to a 280-pound go-kart, right? So they're very fast. There's a lot of grip. Tires are very soft. But the biggest thing is there's no suspension. So every curb that you take and every bump and every kind of movement in the cart, your body is dampening it.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you end up with broken ribs quite often and very bruised. And I did a pro go-kart race in Vegas at the end of 2016 and broke 3 ribs over a 2-day event. So that was my retirement from go-karts after that.
My God, my sciatica is kicking in just listening to this. That's terrible. So even from, I imagine you were pretty good at it at such an early age, or like you said, at a late age for kids doing it. But besides skill, like, did you have like this kind of competitiveness in you from an early age? Like, was losing ever anything you took lightly? How did that all go?
Yes. I mean, I was very competitive. I grew up an only child. My dad is quite a young dad, and he's a very type A personality, and so is my mom, honestly. So he was the type of dad that in the driveway when we were playing basketball would like actively try and beat me.
Right.
And at some points, like, push me down type of thing. So I grew up in a very competitive household from that standpoint. And I remember I got called into it wasn't the principal's office, but it was like during the parent-teacher meetings for like fifth grade. And the teacher called me and my parents in and was like, he got like upset during like the recess soccer game, and like he needs to maybe learn to chill out. My dad was like, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it. So definitely competition is something that was a part of my everyday life and really still is.
Oh my God, that's great. So were you, you know, from that early age, as you did so well as a youth competitor, did you just feel like this is what I'm going to do? Was there ever like a plan B scenario in your head?
Not from a sporting perspective, from like just a life perspective. My parents wouldn't let me keep racing unless I, you know, kind of kept straight A's and made school a priority. So that was always kind of in the back of my head is, well, I can always, you know, go to school if it didn't work out. But it was really the only sport that I ever committed a lot of time and effort to get good at. And with that being said, it really didn't allow for any other time doing anything else.
Right. Was there ever in your head like, well, if it doesn't work out as a professional race car driver, I'm going to become a CPA or a veterinarian or anything like that?
Yeah.
So
I, when I was doing kind of my beginning courses in college, claimed major was biochemistry. Didn't do anything to try and achieve that.
Okay.
But you know, it was kind of, I loved math and science as a kid. That was one of my two favorite subjects in school. And so I thought, you know, it would be a cool profession to, you know, be in the business of making medicines and hopefully helping people. But like I said, similarly, I didn't pursue it in any way because racing was going well and I didn't mean to.
Right. Well, that's great. And did that part of your brain, that analytical, data kind of thing, the machines that you're driving now are, you know, insanely high tech. Do you geek out on that kind of stuff, or you kind of like put that in the hands of the experts and you get behind the wheel and go?
No, definitely. It's something that, you know, so for example, there's over probably 260 sensors on the car that are constantly relaying data back to the engineers and the team. And, you know, after every session, you kind of review, I'd say a good 50 or 60% of the information that's being gathered and kind of make decisions based on that and conditions and how your session went and how the car performance was and everything. So I have a pretty basic understanding of it just because, yes, I'm interested in it, but also because it's just on the job training, right? Like even if you don't have a math or science or vehicle dynamics, mechanical engineering background, you spend so much time looking at all this stuff that you start to just understand, you know, kind of the basic fundamentals of it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, you've got 4 to 5 very highly qualified engineers that are working on your car. So it's best to leave the ultimate decisions to them.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to, you know, watching videos of this, watching it on TV, just, it's so fast. I cannot imagine being inside that car, much less controlling it and being, you know, so close to so many other cars. Like, how do you stay focused in that? Are you ever like, oh my God, or this is just what you do?
It's just what you do, right? Like I look at people that really do anything in kind of a high pressure situation and think, how do they do that? You know, most other sports, I'm just in awe of what they're able to do. And at the end of the day, it's just what you've been doing for so long. So it's that whole theory of after 10,000 hours, you become an expert at something. And, you know, I'm well over 10,000 hours. And it's kind of second nature to me at this point. So there are days where, you know, you're nervous or you don't perform well for one reason or another. But ultimately it's more each race is an opportunity to go win. It's not an opportunity of your mindset isn't, oh, I hope I don't crash or I hope I don't make a mistake. It's, oh, I hope today, you know, everyone does their job right. You know, we win and everyone goes and has some beers and celebrates that night.
Or a bottle of milk if it's the Indy 500.
You know, milk is a big thing for one of the races, which is very weird, but it's tradition, so you can't argue with that. But yeah, milk is something pretty unique after you win the Indy 500.
Yeah, and that was just from one of the drivers requested it, and then it just became a tradition.
Well, it was Louis Meyer back in 19. I get these years mixed up. It was either 1918 or 1924, and he requested buttermilk. So, which is even more disgusting in my mind. But no, it's a tradition that was kind of born then, and that race is so steeped in tradition and pageantry and the history of the event that they don't really change a whole lot.
Yeah, I guess not. So, just speaking in a general, a broader sense, as this. The season is kicking off. A lot of like incredibly famous races are going to occur that you're going to be a part of. Like, you know, so someone who is looking at their own season, whether it's they're launching an app or they're about to take on some big endeavor, like what are some of the ways, you know, you already talked about, you know, mentally and physically preparing yourself. I wonder if you could get a little bit more specific about, you know, daily routines or kind of habits that you use to keep yourself focused on a goal.
Aside from the mental and physical side of it, you know, I'm not a really habitual person from the standpoint of, in terms of when I get to a race weekend, you know, I kind of just want to be able to be flexible with things that are coming up, and I don't want to get ever to a point where if for whatever reason a sponsor commitment or a media commitment didn't allow me to do something, I wasn't then able in my mind to perform because I hadn't done step C. But it, in terms of like leading up to it, you know, I do a lot of kind of self-reflecting on really past mistakes. Like I rarely watch a race back or study a race that I've won. I'm more of the person that will analyze for 2 weeks, you know, a race that we finished 15th. So for me, it's really about trying to understand errors. And then also looking at the guys that were good that weekend and understanding how they were, you know, achieving the results and what they were doing different than me. So I spend a lot of time on that. You know, I'm a perfectionist in some ways, and kind of my own performance is something that I take very seriously from that standpoint.
Mm. And when we talk about competitiveness, I think I know the answer to this, but do you feel that competitiveness from within, like you just want to do better for yourself, or do you like put targets on the on other people's backs and say, I'm going after that guy?
I mean, probably a little bit of both. I would say the majority of it is kind of from within, right? It's I'm trying to, you know, reach these goals that I've set out for myself and try and become the best IndyCar driver. On paper and all of this stuff, but also, you know, in a series like that, there's a lot of guys that are, you know, either very good right now or have accomplished a lot in the sport and are still kind of the benchmark. So there definitely are times when, you know, if you're fifth, for example, and you know, you're not happy with fifth because, you know, it's not first, but you're ahead of one or two of these guys you kind of have in the back of your mind all the time, it kind of softens the blow a little bit, if that makes sense. So,
okay.
You know, there is some kind of competitor-driven desire to beat specific people just based on what they've accomplished. But I'd say most of it comes from just continuing to refine and get better at my craft and what I do.
That's great. And you spoke about, you know, media events and sponsorship stuff. Obviously, racing has a huge, huge business component to it. How involved are you in that? How interested are you in that, in the marketing of yourself and of your team? Is that something you find fulfilling in itself, or is that just something you have to do as a professional racer?
Fulfilling, no. But in terms of, I've learned to embrace it because, you know, I realized very quickly that the sport of driving a race car that I fell in love with at 10 years old, if you look at a year as a whole, you know, you're probably only in the car 30 of that time that you're allotted to being a professional race car driver. And the other 70% is dealing with, you know, the off-track preparation with the team, being in the simulator, being in the gym, as we mentioned. And then also, you know, you've got corporations and sponsors that you're kind of obligated to, and they get a certain amount of days of your time per year, and you got to be switched on and engaged for them. And then also kind of by the same token, you know, there's a lot of media requests that come in and things that are asked of you that are kind of part of your job description as a race car driver. And as much as, you know, driving the car is the ultimate reward, there's still a lot more that goes into the profession than just, you know, getting to do the fun part. There's a lot of work on the outside. So I don't love it, I'll be honest with you, but it's something, it's a very necessary thing, and you got to be good at it, or at least pretend like you're good at it, to keep everyone happy and to keep money flowing.
And of course, though, you love being on this podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I read between the lines. I read between the lines. I got you. So, a lot of people enjoy turning their brains off by, like, you know, at the end of a long day, playing video games, a lot of driving video games. I would guess that that's not the way that you like to turn off your brain, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I'm not a big video game person at all. I never was. In terms of me kind of turning off, so in a year, I probably, last year, I was at home, I think 130 days of the year, right?
Wow.
So a third of the year, roughly. So for me, when I'm home and don't have anywhere to be, like, the relaxing thing to do is just unpack and, like, deal with house projects.
Really?
You know, and not be in a hotel room. Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of the everyday stuff that most people would find boring, like, when
right.
I get a free week to do it, I'm all in. So this past weekend, like, I spent, I think, 8 or 9 hours, you know, hanging curtains and blinds that need to be dealt with, and pictures, and decorating the walls. I moved into a new house, stuff like that. And that was great for me, because I never get to do it. And when I leave on Thursday for the first race of the year next weekend, I won't really be home till May. So it's nice to just be able to do normal things.
When you come home, there'll be curtains hung for you.
Exactly.
I tell you, you are destroying the idea that most people would have of, like, big, manly, burly race car drivers. You're like, I like to hang curtains. So that's an interesting one.
Yeah. Hell, it's cleaning's another thing. I probably shouldn't admit that, but I had a lot of relaxation and cleaning. I'm kind of OCD from that standpoint.
Well, Ted, if you ever want to relax, you come to my house, because there's plenty of cleaning that needs to be done.
I've been told that before.
and no one in my house finds that fun. So we'd love to have you. You know, as you're asking about video games, I was thinking that you probably could make several extra $1 million, like, becoming a pro gamer if you felt like it. I'm sure you have the reflexes.
That's the thing these days, man. Like, it's unbelievable. You know, virtual simulation has become, like, a really big thing in kind of motorsports. And there's a couple, like, programs that exist. I know Nissan has one, to where they kind of have, like, a year-long race championship in whatever game it is. I don't know, to be honest. And then the winner, like, actually gets a paid ride in the actual race car. I know the past couple of guys have actually been pretty good. So
really,
it's amazing. It's amazing that the games are getting so realistic that you don't have to have a usual kind of go-kart background.
Yeah.
You can have a video game background and still be, you know, there or thereabout.
Wow, that's amazing. And you don't crack ribs and while you're playing. So
exactly, and it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
It's win-win. But I guess nothing beats being out there on the track for real. I know you're very early in your career. But do you think to, you know, decades from now? Is there? Do you have some kind of ultimate goal of where you're heading, or are you kind of making it up as you go along?
To be realistic, you know, you're not, the racing driver career probably doesn't really exist past 43. So with that, you know, I hopefully, if I keep doing a good enough job, have 15 years left, to hopefully, you know, win a lot of races and championships and Indy 500s. But, you know, beyond that, I don't really know. It's interesting. My father has a pretty big background now, after kind of getting me to this point in my career in motorsports kind of marketing and management. And he's kind of formed a company and has a lot of young drivers that he looks after. And that's something that I thought about, is kind of partnering with him and kind of helping young American kids, fulfill their dreams of becoming pro race car drivers. Cause, you know, we definitely know how to do it at this point. So,
yeah,
that's something that's kind of I thought about. I would never want to be, after becoming quite good friends with my boss and team owner and former race car driver, Michael Andretti, I would never want to be a team owner just because it looks very stressful and frustrating to deal with people like me all the time. I'd want to continue doing something in racing in some capacity. And I think, you know, helping future talent is a pretty fulfilling thing to do.
That's awesome. Or you know, open a cleaning company. You have a love for it. You could do it quickly.
Probably not that.
Yeah.
I might retire to like sim racing, you know, if it seems to be going.
Very cool. Well, I'm really thankful that you were able to hop on this call with us. And of course, we wish you the best of luck. What do racers say? Can you say good luck?
Good luck is totally fine. I'm
okay.
Not a superstitious person, so you're all good.
All right, good. Well, good luck. Awesome.
Thank
talking
you.
To you. Glad you aren't getting any speeding tickets lately, and we'll look for you on the old TV with the checkered flag.
All right, man. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you again. That's our episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Get a Real Job comes out every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you harvest your favorite podcasts. Leave us a review. Give us a share. Don't make me beg, people. Go to entrepreneur.com for new episodes of this and to listen to our other great podcasts. Thanks.